Continuing with chapter 19, text number 3. The scene from yesterday evening, beginning of the chapter. Maharaj pictured his back. The royal palace. Still thinking over the event that just took place. His offense to the Brahmana. And how his repentance for that goes beyond just feeling sorry or feeling bad, but wanting to put in place a position of fixed consciousness where that such mistake will never happen again. And he's calling upon the Lord's intervention for that to happen. And the very wonderful verse, this verse 3, he speaks further about the duties of the king and with his attachment to the Supreme, his detachment from all material circumstances. So he says, I am uncivilized and sinful. Due to my neglect of Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection. He doesn't say, well, I've done so many good things in my life. I've been so devoted and so conscientious in my duties. What's a little mistake? He didn't rationalize the whole thing. There is such a tendency to want to pat ourselves in the back and think of ourselves as, you know, basically, I mean, maybe not perfect, but far above the ordinary, and so there's some discrepancy. Just shrug it off. It's not just because it's at this point he doesn't know what the consequence is, that he's been cursed to die. He doesn't know that. He knows, all he knows is he made a very bad, impulsive move. And he identifies what that bad move is. I've deployed my prowess and my position. I've abused my position of power to disrespect Brahminical culture. I'm uncivilized and sinful due to my neglect of Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection. Therefore, I wish that my kingdom, strength, and riches be burnt up immediately. By the fire of the Brahmana's wrath. So he's thinking Shamikrishi, because he's the one that he offended. It's a theme in the Bhagavatam that pride What is pride? Pride is taking credit for something that the credit should go to the person who supplied that something. Krishna. You have something, and you're proud of that something. Where did that something come from? Came from Krishna. But when you're forgetful of Krishna, you become proud of that something that you have. That is, Prabhupada said, even a pauper is proud of his penny. Maybe you've heard me narrate this before, but because I was sitting with Prabhupada when he spoke this message, it's stuck. He said when he was a young boy, he used to ride with his father by train from Calcutta to Puri to attend the Jagannath Rath Yatra. So one time when they stopped on the platform, the train stopped, he got off on the platform. And he saw one pauper and his wife, a poor man and his wife. They had a burlap cloth, and they were very carefully moving the pieces of wood that they had gathered from one part of the cloth to another. He was counting his collection of wood, and then wrapping that up very carefully. Even the pauper is proud of his penny. And those that have more than a penny, they're proud that they have more than a penny. But whether it's the pauper or the one that has a lot, where has that come from? Whatever it is, whatever ability, whatever beauty, whatever strength, whatever knowledge, whatever capacity you have, any one of us, where does it come from? And if you forget where it's come from, there's pride. And it's a theme. Now back to the theme of the Bhagavatam is where there's pride, then one can do very cruel things. Very hurtful, thoughtless, cruel things. A prime example of this is when Narada considers the pride of Nalakuvara and Manigriva. I really like that section of the Bhagavatam. I like especially the sections of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam where it discloses the inner thought process of a perfected person or Krishna. How Krishna considers something, or how is Narada contemplating when this situation confronts him. Here are these two sons of the wealthiest in the kingdom of heaven, Kuvera, the treasurer of heaven. He's got wealth. And his sons have the opulence of their father. And so they're intoxicated with pride. They're intoxicated with pride. Meant they felt they could also, on the mountain of Lord Shiva, which was on the suburbs or the part of the kingdom of Kuvera, so their father's place, but Lord Shiva's designated place, intoxicated, naked, carrying on like just terrible people, completely shameless and proud. Proud of their wealth and proud of their father's unique relationship with Lord Shiva. Those two things in particular. So whether it's a burlap cloth with wood or it's the king, the wealth of the king of heaven or the treasure of heaven or anything in between. The point that Narada, when he's considering what to do with these people, he's not thinking, because he's a Vaishnava, he's not thinking, they've offended me. He's thinking, these poor people, they're so intoxicated with pride. And when someone becomes intoxicated with pride, they can do any cruel thing. He specifically speaks of harming animals, slaughtering animals, specifically. And that fits in perfectly with the duties of a king, the one who has been gifted by the Supreme Lord with power, physical prowess and dominance. Pride can easily come. So what's the use of this physical prowess and dominance if it's not used for protection of Brahminical culture and protection of cows? And he's adding a third thing, God consciousness, protection or uplifting the citizens to God consciousness. All of the king's treasury, all, Prabhupada writes in the purport, all the fruits of economic development, whether it's in this category, that category, it should be applied towards these three. Now, Prabhupada added this God consciousness to a series of, there are five items. You've all heard them, but I'll repeat them again just for refresher. There are five items where certain citizens within certain, citizens of the state should be offered protection. The brahmanas and cows. Women, children, elderly. Of these five, Prabhupada regularly singles out or points to Brahminical culture and cow protection. Here he's adding God consciousness. Brahminical culture and cow protection. The specific incidence doesn't have anything to do with cow protection. It does have to do with Brahminical culture. And it does have to do with God consciousness. It doesn't specifically have anything to do with cow protection. But pride has something to do with cow protection. And the fostering of Brahminical culture is enhanced by the quality of goodness. I mean, there's no Brahminical culture without goodness. And the cultivation, the protection of cows strengthens one's inherent quality of goodness. Or the reverse is, if one is not respecting the position of the cow, our mother, then how can there be goodness? And it's not just not killing the cow, it's respecting the cow. Protecting the cow. And again, we've all heard these things so many times, but what is it specifically about the cow? The cow gives service. She gives milk, and milk is that nutritious food that Prabhupada regularly speaks about that sanctifies brain tissue to help us understand higher spiritual matter. And the cow's milk provides ghee that is used in fire yoga, and therefore directly linked, that which the cow produces is directly linked to sacrifice, the formal Vedic sacrifice. Mantras are chanted in the offering of oblations into the fire along with ghee. And even the cow urine and cow dung is valuable, medicinal, and provides fuel. All the cow does is give service. Maybe some of you were there with us when we visited the house of Saranga Thakur in Mamgachi in Navadvip. Maybe you weren't there. one of our devotees in America made a contribution to the mandir. It was a very, very old brahmachari who has been there for maybe 75 years. He's really old. And just serving the deity. He's just such a saintly personality. Just to be in his presence, you don't have to speak a word, you can feel what a saintly person he is, what to speak of what comes when he begins to speak. So they made a donation so they could have gobar gas. They have a little goshal in the back, and they showed, you just, I don't know exactly what the technology is, but the thing, the gas rises and goes down a tube, and that's how they're cooking. You don't have to go collect firewood or anything. Just protect the cows, cook with gobar gas. Little lady was doing the cooking. Didn't speak a word of English, but she smiled like anything. It's just like that. I wanted to see the fire. She lit it. No, you don't need propane and bottled gas. Just gobar gas. The governments all over the world are going to spend who knows how much money to find alternative sources. Guess what? Cow poop. But a little more trouble. But is it more trouble? Look at the trouble that the world is going to get the other kind. Lives and bloodshed. Hare Krishna. So, cow protection is a matter of respect of mother. And if one doesn't respect mother, and if one doesn't respect the brahmana, how is there going to be goodness? If there isn't goodness, it's two choices. Passion or ignorance. And passion leads to ignorance. So it's one choice. Either direct or indirect. So people are going to choose passion first before ignorance, but then leads to ignorance. So, for Kali Yuga to advance, there has to be increase of animal slaughter, increase of disrespect or misuse, abuse of the medical culture. So actually, it's the other way around. This is the king feeling this way about the medical culture. But the real problem is the son of Shamik Rishi. He was under the influence of the personality of Kali. By having brahminical strength, but not having the character to know how to use brahminical strength due to the influence of personality, Kali. It's like, you know, what the modern situation is, where we have people that have technology without character. They're dangerous people. Doing dangerous things. Or being the agents of those that want to do dangerous things. So selling out to people who want to do dangerous things. To make a more dangerous world. For lack of respect for medical culture. Well, like this point that I was bringing up yesterday evening. This intelligent design argument that's going on. The people that are testifying in the courtroom are all scientists. And then there's, you know, scientist bashing going on in the courtroom. And the outcome is who created things. The judges are going to decide. It's a joke, but it's a serious joke. It's so sad. But so the intellectuals are bashing in the arena. The theists and the atheists. It's not a new program. The would-be Brahmins, would-be, should-be, aren't having the capacity but misusing the capacity Brahmins. The, you know, modernist shingis is exactly what's going on. Having some capacity, misusing it. For lack of proper training and proper guidance, for lack of the presence of qualified brahmanas to train those same scientists when they were going to college or before they went to college, going to school, training up their brains. So the fight is over the brains. The fight is over. Can you even introduce the possibility that things didn't come about by chance or by natural causes? All the symmetry in the universe came about by force of the laws of nature. All the whatever it is that makes up the twisting spiral of a DNA just came about by the... It had to come out that way because it's the laws of nature. It had to come out that way. You can't consider another alternative because the demons rule. Just before coming, I saw that there's an action filed in the state of California for a school district that decided to teach intelligent design. They're not saying God. They're just saying it's more scientific to say there was design behind all of this pattern. There was an intelligence making the design of this pattern than to say it came about by chance. We're taking you to court. It's so bad. Anyway, that's the would-be, should-be, but they aren't Brahmins. It's where things go when the Brahminical culture isn't protected. So the king is wishing, take away this prowess. Take away this opulence. Take away this position. Take away this prestige. Take it away. Let me have nothing. Because it's the same conclusion, voluntary conclusion, that Narada came to with Nalakuvir and Madhivir. Better they have nothing. For a long time. Nothing. And while they're having nothing, they want to stand naked. Let them stand naked. They can stand as trees for thousands and thousands of years. Naked trees. Nothing. Then they'll stop being cruel or having tendency for them. So the king is saying, I'm cruel because I have... He's volunteering without Narada having to intervene because he has that quality. He has a higher nature, and he's normally fixed in that higher nature. The fruit of piety, and that's dharma, comes in the form of artha. So economic development, whatever particular occupation may come from, must be fully utilized in relation to the above principles. Otherwise, all so-called economic development becomes a source of degradation. Now Prabhupada here connects cow protection with Brahminical culture by saying cow protection means feeding the Brahminical culture, which leads towards God consciousness. He doesn't expand, just makes a boom, boom, boom statement. Cow protection feeds Brahminical culture. So the Vaishya community, where the trade and commerce comes, you know, within the modern world is called businessmen. They should If they're earning their wealth other than protecting cows, the wealth should go to protecting cows. Because if you don't, the cow is going to be seen as an object that just means making money, another machine to make money. And when people see objects as a machine to make money, or people, or creations of God as just some facility to make money, that's passion, and it's not Brahminical, it's not Vedic culture. I was once looking for a farm for our Boston temple. We never got one, but I was being asked to look. At the time I was a regional secretary. So I was looking around and fell and found a nice farm and right on the border between Massachusetts and right between Boston and Hartford, right kind of midway between those two cities we have temples. I thought that might be a good location. So I went to look at a farm, and the man was at home, and you're a nice young man. Let me put his arm around me. Let me give you some advice. You see that place down the street there? It's a dairy farm. This man is up at the crack of dawn and is working so hard all day long, and he's poor. This is a cattle farm. Take my advice. Don't do that. Do this. I've got all the time I want for doing whatever I want. All the money I want for doing whatever I want. You're a nice young man. Take my advice. Don't do that. Do this. I wasn't going as a Hare Krishna devotee. I was going as a young man buying a farm, because otherwise I didn't think they would sell me a farm. And I was thinking, whoa. So many examples of that. The other way around is we have a farm in mid-Pennsylvania called Gita Nagari. Krishna Smart has been there. A few of the devotees have been there. We have a seminar there once a year. So when the farm was bought, the devotee in charge, his name was Paramananda, in order to bridge the relationship between the Hare Krishna devotees in the middle of this very traditional state of Pennsylvania, and between ourselves and them, he decided to enter into the annual agriculture and farm show, the state fair it's called, Pennsylvania State Fair. Every year, he brought his cows from the farm, and they won first, second, and third place. 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 So he started getting some attention. Yeah, how are you so successful? He said, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. He said, no, come on, tell us. He said, by protecting cows. Because when the cow is protected, she feeling protected, she gives so much milk. And very healthy. And if she's not protected, she doesn't give so much milk, and she's always in anxiety because there's the lack of being cared for. And they feel that. See, I told you wouldn't believe me. Because you're just seeing the cow as an object to earn money. And I'm seeing the cow as my mother to be protected. So we're always coming for a second and third, for a second and third, for a second and third. And when the cow is nicely protected, Krishna is pleased. And when the Brahmanas and Brahminical culture is respected, Krishna is pleased. Many places in the 10th canto, Krishna speaks about the brahmanas. When he speaks to Shrutadev, when he goes to visit Shrutadev in Bahulashva, king and the brahmana, and he expands himself into two Krishnas so to receive their two simultaneous invitations. He speaks to Shrutadev in this way. That respecting the brahmanas is more dear to me than one who respects me. Because they are more dear to me than my own life. Krishna values brahmanical culture. I mean, that's the spiritual end. You please Krishna, and everything else follows. But there's the enhancement of the vote of goodness quality. What is it that the brahmana does? The brahmana sees. The brahmana gives vision to society. Which way to lead your life in order to become elevated in God consciousness. So, the actual acquisition of God consciousness, these are things that the king was to see to. Protection of Brahminical culture, protection of the cows, advancement of God consciousness. Now these functions are, to say it again, they're functions of a king. In the absence of proper kings, then the religious people are doing those things. Like Prabhupada would speak with people, government leaders, police, you know, how to curb crime, how to get people off of drugs, those kinds of things. And Prabhupada was saying, I'm doing it. The government should support this. It's actually the government's work that we're doing. Because you're neglectful of your work. So with our limited capacity, we're doing what we can. You give us some portion of the scads of money that you're spending to control crime because of drug abuse. Give some of that to us. And you'll do a better job than the money. You know, you get more for your money. But you won't do that. The separation of church and state. And so, we'll do the best we can. But you could do the same thing. But you won't. Separation of church and state. It's a state function. You want to cut off God. So you got a lot of problems to manage that aren't going to go away. It's a king's function. But the king is to support political culture. And the devotees of the Lord are likewise to support and promote political culture. So towards what end should one's economic development be used? You take what you need for your maintenance, and beyond that, these three categories are where charity should be given. In case you weren't clear about it, here it is. Cow protection, Brahminical culture, and God consciousness. So when persons give their contributions to ISKCON, or to an organization that performs these three functions, they're doing their charitable, responsible work. And they can also volunteer and assist in directly doing the work as well, or a combination of the two. The age of Kali aims at killing the higher principle of life. And although Maharaj Pariksit strongly resisted the domination of the personality of Kali within the world, the influence of the age of Kali came at an opportune moment, and even a strong king like Maharaj Pariksit was induced to disregard political culture due to a slight provocation of hunger and thirst.
Prabhupada
is speaking, it's a short purport, but it's very strong. Repeats the same point that if wealth is not used in these three categories, it will be used some other way, and that some other way will lead to a civilization that is decaying, or he says here, doomed. It's spiraling out of control and no one can stop it. People are screaming and jumping to bail, you know, to get out of this downward spiral, and some are hanging on dearly to it. It's a frightful situation. There is a cure. Bhagavatam is providing that cure, and that a society needs to be directed towards these principles. They're not new principles. They're very ancient, time-tested, scripturally derived principles. And they make the greatest sense when you look at them one by one. If we at all want peace and prosperity in the world, we should take lessons from this verse. Every state and every home must endeavor to advance the cause of Brahminical culture for self-purification, God consciousness for self-realization, and cow protection for getting sufficient milk and the best food to continue a perfect civilization. So, the king is berating himself. I've done the opposite. So, all of my resource should be taken away. And by its being taken away, in the future I won't even be in a position to do what I did. In the future I may not be guided by such inauspicious attitudes. And so these are the first three introductory verses. The king is reflecting on what just happened and processing what just happened in a very fixed state of consciousness. A message comes from the sage. The sage, he had multiple conflicting emotions. One of those emotions was, it's already been expressed, what a terrible thing my son has done. One emotion. Another emotion was, the king should find out so he can prepare himself to meet death. Then another emotion is, I can't go myself and tell him because it will embarrass the king. He's thinking about the feelings of the king, not thinking about, you know, his own stuff. Why did he do this? He's thinking about the feelings of the king, giving warning to the king and admonishment for his son's wrongdoing. And when the king finds out, he made an offense. But he doesn't want to go back to speak to the brahmana. It's not because, you know, he would be shamed if he did so. It's because the brahmana would, he knows the brahmana would feel terrible. The emperor of the world is coming back to offer his apology for something my son did. So he didn't want to embarrass or put the brahmana in an awkward situation, so he didn't go. He didn't go to beg forgiveness, he didn't go to beg, oh, can you remove the curse or neutralize it somehow or make it a little bit lighter, please. Give me a benediction after the curse or something. He felt this is just. And he felt very good because And it's something that Prabhupada has spoken about in chapter 18, but it was this, the arrangement of the kings becoming overwhelmed was not due to the influence of the personality of Kali, it was due to the direct influence of the internal potency of the Lord for two reasons. One, we all know very well, is so that the Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken. And all the sages could assemble and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam be recited by Shukadeva Goswami. And we, in turn, could have it today. So Maharaj Pariksit's life was sacrificed, or an arrangement was made for that to happen for us. Of course, it could have happened some other way, but the Lord chose that way. And the second reason was because Maharaj Pariksit was involved in so much worldly affairs. And so the Lord sometimes, Prabhupada explains this in chapter 18, that he'll sometimes make some arrangement where some awkward situation arises, where one's entanglement or involvement with the material world is just disrupted. And the devotee understands, this is the Lord's mercy. He's disentangling me from this place. He's very kind. He's able to think like that, a devotee is able to think like that, because of attachment to Krishna, which allows for detachment from material circumstance. As Prabhupada explains, every living being is dependent on something because he is so created. Very simple statement. We're dependent. We're not independent. We're dependent. So we can be dependent upon God, or we can be dependent upon material circumstances. Take your pick. And generally, people don't even think of depending upon God, so they take their pick. Depend on material circumstances. And are material circumstances a kind master or a rough master? Sometimes it's going okay, and then just wait a while, and something breaks down. And then it's not nice anymore. So a devotee isn't dependent upon material circumstances. If the material circumstances abruptly shift, so be it. And it's yet another opportunity presented by the Supreme Lord to become fully dependent upon him. And the devotee takes it in a joyful spirit as a merciful act of the Supreme Lord. The king accepted this as good news. Hari Paul, I'm going to die in 7 days. For it would be the cause of his indifference toward worldly things. Prabhupada writes that they're paraphrasing Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purnar Arvartanur, from the highest planet down to the lowest, all are places where repeated birth and death, and in between misery are accomplished, are coming our way, and still we don't look for an alternative. What a sorrowful condition. But there are those that they're simply striving for that position of deathlessness or the position of spiritual perfection. And such a person who's striving for spiritual perfection, they're protected. Even when reversals come, yes, when reversals come, it's just taking away some part of the temporary material circumstance. That's going to be taken away anyways, later or sooner. But because they're striving for spiritual perfection, that's the shelter they're left with. Lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Easy to speak, since it's a whole other thing to accomplish that consciousness. But by becoming absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam's message, that consciousness becomes your consciousness. It works like that. The spiritual potencies are there in the message of Godhead to carry you to that position. Say it the other way around. One who doesn't bring their consciousness to the message of transcendence, there's only one thing to be attached to, and that's all the things that are going to be taken away. And it's going on since time immemorial. And people choose to become attached to those things that are going to be taken away. Most unfortunate. So let's go back on the other side. Better to invest your consciousness in those messages, that those potencies that will carry you to the stage of spiritual perfection. And then as you're passing through life, the things that come, you give credit to the source of where they've come from. You use them in the service of the source, and then they go. And it's part of the Lord's plan to prepare you to go to the eternal kingdom of God. The coming, the engaging, and those things go. These three items. Purification, self-purification through cultivation of God consciousness. And self-purification through brahminical culture, God consciousness for self-realization, and cow protection, because it ushers one into the realm of brahminical culture. So, that's the Bhagavatam's message. And then apply it in your life, and that path of God consciousness, the path of perfection, opens. The purport is so nice. So, I'd like to read a good part of the final paragraph. Before that, Prabhupada speaks that these two, Shamik Rishi and the king, were both perfected souls. So on a spiritual plane, they were equals. Although one was a yogi, the other was a devotee. I mean, Maharaj Prikshit's position was he wasn't just sitting in meditation in samadhi. He was always engaged in service to the personality of Godhead. The sage, he was always engaged in meditating upon the personality of Godhead. Through both approaches, both were fixed in spiritual consciousness and fearless of death. Now, there is a distinction between the two, and Maharaj Prikshit is in the superior position because of his quality of devotion. A special dispensation was provided for him to take him back to Godhead. So then Prabhupada writes, the life of a human being is a chance to prepare oneself to go back to Godhead, or to get rid of the material existence, the repetition of birth and death. And there's training for that to happen. Thus, in the system of Varnashram Dharma, every man and woman is trained for this purpose. In other words, the system of Varnashram Dharma is known also as Sanatana Dharma, or the eternal occupation. The system of Varnashram Dharma prepares a man for going back to Godhead. And thus, a householder is ordered, go to the forest as Vanaprastha to acquire complete knowledge, and then take sannyas prior to his inevitable death. Maharaj Prikshit was fortunate to get a 7-day notice to meet his inevitable death, but for the common man, there is no definite notice. Although death is inevitable for all. Foolish men forget this sure fact of death and neglect the duty of preparing themselves for going back to Godhead. They spoil their lives in animal propensities, eat, drink, and be merry and enjoy. Such an irresponsible life is adopted by the people in the age of Kali because of a sinful desire to condemn Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection, for which the state is responsible. This separation of the purpose of life and state. And the reason there was, what's the historical reason? There's, you know, it's degradation in general, but the government teamed up with the church teamed up with the government because the church wanted to expand. The government said, we can dominate the people if everybody gets behind one state religion. But then the religious people became corrupt, and the government became corrupt. Hand in glove. Corruption. So separate these two. I mean, there's long histories, but separate the two functions. Protect religion, but the state can't be involved in it. But how do you protect religion? The state doesn't. You separate the two, because it's a state function to promote God consciousness, Brahminical culture, and cow protection. Prabhupada speaks about this again and again. In the absence of the qualified king, qualified head of state, then there is protection of Brahminical culture. When there is protection of Brahminical culture, the citizens don't have direction. When they don't have direction, they become sudras, all of them. And then the sudras elect another sudra. He rules. And it goes on. And they're dissatisfied with the sudra they elected, so they tear him down, put another guy up. So both are dissatisfying. And so a corrupt king and a totally unqualified sudra, neither of them are good. So, what's the cure? Srimad Bhagavatam is suggesting the cure is the promotion of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the promotion of God consciousness, and reestablishing Brahminical culture. So when Prabhupada started this Hare Krishna movement, he explicitly said, my wish is to train up a class of first-class men. So, you know, pridefully we're thinking, yeah, we should become first class. But what he meant was Brahminical. Free from pride. But actually qualified. And so, the principle of training people to become Vaishnavas or devotees of the Lord means Brahminical quality will come. Because we want to please Krishna. And so cow protection and upholding of standards of goodness are to be met. And that's the Bhagavatam's answer to this degradation of the age of Kali. Just in a conversation after our program last night, degradation in the age of Kali is fearful for persons that don't understand Krishna's ultimate protection. Krishna's ultimate protection can protect one from that degradation. If one becomes personally uplifted by investment of faith in Bhagavad Dharma, then A, that person is protected, and B, that person can then influence others to come to that standard as well. It takes some faith in these principles. But faith in these principles will naturally come if you follow them. There'll be realization. It's highly effective when applied properly. And Prabhupada would often quote or just point to his students who previously their lives were made up of all bad things. And taking to Krishna consciousness, they gave up all those bad things. Now, if slackening of submission to Krishna takes place, then those bad things will reappear. But same for every one of us. But when taking shelter of Krishna is there, those bad things disappear. The problems that government is trying to manage will disappear if God consciousness is there. The peace, and is he speaking, the peace and prosperity that people want. And so it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be military, but the use of that military strength is only for protecting these principles and not for domination and control and all the other things that people use it for these days. Okay, it's past 7:30, and if there are students that have a class, no class. All right. Okay. So any comments or questions you'd like to bring up?
In the case of Maharaj Parikshit, he made one mistake where he could easily acknowledge, and feel repentant about it.
Yeah.
For us, we make so many mistakes.
Yeah.
So hard, it seems like one might just dwell in
meditation. Toss in the towel and say, take me, Krishna.
The reason I'm saying this is you emphasize that you didn't rationalize this mistake, he accepts it.
Well, yeah, in this particular case, he's inspired to say to Krishna, please send whatever punishment I'm deserving. Yesterday I emphasized the point because he wanted, he just fixed his consciousness on service. It's a principle that Rupa Goswami teaches in Nectar Devotion. If there's discrepancy in our devotional service, what is our process of correction? It's rededication to the process of devotional service. It's not some separate prayaschitta. So we may take a redoubled position to be enthusiastic in our devotional service, minus such mistakes. Prabhupada would jokingly, if somebody missed Mangalarti, then they should go and sell one Krishna book. Their atonement is something, devotional service. It's not like that's a punishment. It's like Lord Nityananda telling Raghunath Das, you're keeping a distance. You're a thief. I'm going to punish you. Feed all the Vaishnavas. Take up devotional service with renewed enthusiasm and with resolve that the strength of Krishna may keep me from this repeating this mistake. And there's so many, because without Krishna's help, I'm not going to be able to accomplish that mission. So he's speaking of protection from Brahminical culture to bring about self-purification. So that's another commitment to Brahminical culture. That means one's own Brahminical culture and the principle of Brahminical culture. You know, the way which I apply myself to my day-to-day sadhana and the application of those principles throughout the course of, it's just dedication and rededication. Respecting those who are so qualified. Internally and externally, respecting those who are so qualified. Okay. Anyone else? Certainly a big contributing factor, because you do it the other way around. Soft-hearted is recognizing it's submissive to Krishna. Hard-hearted is you're closed. You're closed to Krishna, and whatever it is that's going on in life, I'm proud of it. Even if it's bad stuff, I'm proud of it. And that's where this rationalizing, it's okay because pride. That Prabhupada does attribute other causes to hard-heartedness, frustration. Vitaraga paya krodha. So it's not the only, but it's a big one. Okay. You were mentioning about the atheistic academicians threatening to take to court. They've already done it. Proponents of intelligent design theory. Is it possible that this may be Krishna's protection and plan against pseudo-religionists like so-called Christians who would capitalize on such preaching possibilities? Yeah. It's like Shankaracharya was Krishna's mercy. Because sometimes it's thought of like that, because he kept far away from the sincere souls. He took away people that are, you know, misguided individuals. And Maya is also doing the same. She's engaging persons. She's keeping away from Krishna all persons that are not a favorable disposition to him. She's giving them plenty to do. That's how she sees her service. But if we, let's say, if we were to ask Srila Prabhupada, this debate in court over intelligent, in academia, the debate over intelligent design versus chance and natural causes, What should our understanding be, Srila Prabhupada? This is very good. It's keeping the pseudo-religions away from, out of the classrooms, because they would just take ill advantage of this intelligent design idea. He would go the whole way. Some devotees are considering that important, not to get involved in the political fray, but Prabhupada was making statements during the early days of the Back to Godhead magazine. Prabhupada would assess what was happening in the world and give the Vedic perspective. So some suggestions there we should make the, what's the Vedic perspective on this debate that's going on? Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate. But it's something that Prabhupada very much wanted, explicitly, implicitly and explicitly, very much wanted, was that the blind faith that our modern population has in science should be shaken, so that it will allow them the opportunity to have reasoned faith in descending spiritual wisdom. But the blind faith in modern science is a strong block on careful consideration of descending Vedic knowledge. I have on my hard drive, someone provided me with a presentation made at a large university in America where the state of Kansas, the state education, has passed a law that permits intelligent design to be taught as a scientific alternative to Darwinian evolution. And it's been upheld in court in Kansas, and it's being tested in other states. So that person was invited. The state that there's presently a court case going on is the state of Pennsylvania. So at Penn State University, a professor at whatever it is, University of Kansas in Lawrence or something, one of their spokespeople in the State Department of Education was invited to speak. And I have that lecture and I have the PowerPoint that he presented. I listened to the lecture and he's got a lot of opposition of very carefully trained academic students, and there are probably some professors in the audience too, really peppering him with, you know, but this, but that, but this, but that, but this. You know, they're invested in this idea of Darwinian evolution. They've got a lot at stake. Their careers, academicians, their careers are at stake. And their reputation is at stake. And to stray from that position, someone going in their midst that's straying from that position, that's, we gotta stop this guy. Or these people. So, Prabhupada would want to see our Bhaktivedanta Institute or our scientific preachers to take the full-on Vedic position, not just the intelligent design position. So therefore, when I'm asked to speak on the title is going to be Intelligent Design and the Vedic Perspective. Intelligent Design title will pull people in. Then I They can say this is the debate and this is the Vedic perspective. It's a very rational approach, and as we know, in principle, rational approaches are incomplete. Because whatever argument you put forward, there's always a counter-argument presented. But part of the approach that our scientific preachers do is to point out the arguments of Darwinian evolution. So here's another model. The model that's being proposed is milquetoast. There's an intelligence behind the design. Not only there's intelligence behind the design, so that's a teleological argument, but that's not a proof, because arguments are never conclusive. We need to go to the Vedic model, that knowledge comes in this descending fashion. Krishna says, and one of the arguments that the man was making back, every time somebody peppered him, he came back with the same reply, do you know? You know that you can do this and that and this and that in the laboratory, but do you know that that's how what we have came about? Do you know that? What in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you can't know by that method. That which is created cannot know its source of emanation. It cannot be known. Even the great sages and demigods, as elevated as they are, they don't know, because they themselves are created. Anything that's created cannot know its source of emanation. Unless the source of emanation discloses, you'll never know conclusively. Anyway, so we can go through the back and forth of the argument and then take the Vedic picture. Anything else? I'll provide Krishna Smarana with it's like a five page little document that summarizes what this issue is about. This side says this, and that side says that. So at least you're prepared for it if you do your studies abroad. You know what you're going to meet. Academia. Okay, thank you very much, Shri Prabhupada. Keith.